Blog Talk Radio.
He is the last of his kind. All that remains of a once powerful nation. Some think he is a myth. Some believe he is the chosen one, who will bring balance to a world at war. And some will stop at nothing to destroy him.
Freeing up capital to make investments may not be as hard as you think. For those of you who have Facebook accounts, send me a friend request over there on Facebook and LinkedIn to Tahaka Amana Elbay. That's T-A-R-H-A-K-A. Amana is A-M-A-A-N-A and then E-L and of course B-E-Y. And you'll be able to see the actual documents clearly showing you how I was able to cancel my mortgage and property taxes contracts, and that way I have freed up capital for investments. To get the apparatus to do this with, go to www.newdebtelimination.com. That's www.newdebtelimination.com. It's not as hard as you think. Send a friend request on Facebook, and I'll grant that request so you can actually see the documents for yourself. Peace.
Welcome, Morris, to Morris Talk Live 100. I'm your host, Tahaka Amana Elbay, and this evening we have some very, very informative information for you. We have some people that have turned some things around when it comes to their mortgage and dealing with these banks, and we want to check out how these folks done this thing and what they've done, because we are talking about actually shutting down the bank. And this stuff has actually been done. The marshals come to the bank. They go to moving our furniture, put it on trucks, collecting cash, and taking everything out of there. Because of a fraudulent act on the behalf of the bank involving people's mortgage. And we want to check out a few little short clips on this evening. And also in the second half of this broadcast, one of the most prolific shamans, psychics, fortune tellers, future tellers, you name it, this brother is it. Brother Kwedo Mudawa brings us up to date on past, present, and future events to occur inside the United States. This is very, very important information. He actually names people, put the name on them, put the finger on them. This is a bad boy. Tonight we're dealing with how do you get even with the bank? Can you sue the bank for fraud? How did time begin? What happened in the past that will play out today? And this is just some of what we're going to deal with here this evening. And I want y'all to go ahead and buckle your seatbelts because we're going to learn something here tonight. Some of us may be familiar with Brother Kwedo, but for those of you who are not familiar with him, you can find his YouTube videos over there on YouTube. He's got a ton of information where he outright names the man who killed Kennedy to tell you where he at and all of that. The reptilian agenda. The brother goes back in time and tells the stories of the ancient Africans. And this information is being kept among the ancient Africans for thousands of years. And this brother brings out some stuff. It goes all the way back to the beginning of time. Startling information. I mean, we've been fed a whole lot of information about a lot of different things. But this guy here, he really sets the record straight. Keep in mind, to dial into this broadcast, dial the number 310-982-4184. That's 310-982-4184. If you have a question or if you have a comment involving what we're discussing here this evening, don't hesitate to raise your hand. I'll open up the line so that you can get in, okay? If you want to go back and listen to all the previous broadcasts that we've done, go to www.blogtalkradio.com/Tahaka, T-A-R-H-A-K-A, and you can go back anytime you want to and listen to any previous broadcast that we've done. For those of you who have Tahaka's Archive Master Library, all you have to do is go to the homepage. My widget comes up right there on that homepage, and listen to any past broadcast you want to. It's right there in your face, okay? Send a friend request on Facebook to Tahaka Manael page. If you're on Facebook, send that friend request. We'll grant that so you can get in, and you can look at the stuff we're posting there. We got some sisters that are running some daytime radio broadcasts. Sister Sharon Bay, she's on in the morning, and we'll be having another sister that will be coming on in the morning. So y'all look out for that. We'll be helping with the advertisement to get that show out there. They'll be talking about a variety of subjects and stuff and have a lot of good special guests. So make sure that y'all pay attention to those broadcasts, okay? Now, let's deal with this bank situation, man, because I want to find out how these folks, what they done involving these banks, how the homeowners turned the table on the bank. We got a little short clip. Let's check it out.
As a foreclosure defense attorney, this is Sweet Justice. Only on Wink tonight, the tables are turned. Instead of Bank of America foreclosing on a home, a homeowner has deputies foreclose on the bank.
Bank of America filed foreclosure papers on a homeowner who didn't owe a dime. They paid for their house with cash.
Renee Stoll live at the Bank of America branch on Davis Boulevard in Naples with this story you'll see only on Wink tonight.
This is about a family who fought back and won. Their foreclosure nightmare started when they bought a house in the Golden Gate Estates owned by Bank of America. Like you said, they paid cash, so they never had a mortgage. Well, Bank of America fouled it up somewhere along the lines and actually tried to foreclose on the family. And what happened today, you're just going to have to see to believe. Movers, a truck, and an armed deputy, all while a nervous homeowner stands by and waits. This is normally what you'd see when a person's being foreclosed on and their property seized by a bank. But today, it's the other way around.
They've ignored our calls, ignored our letters. Legally, this is the next step to get my client compensated.
A Collier County judge said Bank of America had to pay Maureen Nyerges and her husband's legal fees after the bank tried to foreclose on their Golden Gate Estates property, but they paid cash. The courts agreed they never had a mortgage to begin with. After more than 5 months, the bank still hadn't paid up. So the homeowner's attorney did just what the bank would do to get their money, seize their assets.
I instructed the deputy to go in and take desks, computers, copiers, filing cabinets, including cash in the drawers.
Outside the bank, several deputies stood by with movers ready to start hauling out the bank's office supplies and furniture. Inside, the homeowner's attorney was locked out of the bank manager's office by deputies while the bank manager tried to figure out what to do.
He was visibly shaken. Having two sheriff's deputies sitting across your desk and a lawyer standing up behind them, you know, demanding whatever assets are in the bank, it can be intimidating. But so is having your home foreclosed on when it's wasn't right.
After about an hour, the bank finally cut a check.
As a foreclosure defense attorney, this is Sweet Justice, because this is a symptom of a larger problem.
Now, the homeowner's attorney says that he sees mistakes all the time in foreclosure court where banks do not do their due diligence, and it winds up becoming a very lengthy process for the homeowners. He says he can only think of one other time where an attorney, the deputies, and a U-Haul came to a bank before ready to seize property. That was in Tampa. As far as Bank of America, they issued a statement saying that they apologized for the wait on the payment. They issued a notice to pay from the attorney that was working on the case on their side, but they didn't know the attorney went out of business. We'll be reporting live here in Naples. Renee Stolwink News now.
All right, Renee, thank you.
All right. Now, that's what I'm talking about right there. Get 'em. Go ahead and I'll file your lien. List all the assets and sock it to them. When they do you and they roll you, roll them. Over at NewDebtElimination.com, we have the Get Rid of the Mortgage Package. This is one of the most sound investments that a person can, or tools that they can use in dealing with your mortgage companies in your bank. I have yet to see any mortgage company dispute anything in the information. They're head for the heels on this. If you have a mortgage, you want to remember the time to make ammunition is in peacetime. You don't wait till you get in trouble with your house before getting rid of the mortgage. The mortgage is illegal. It's a lien. There is no money in America, and the bank didn't give you any. When they told you that the bank would give you a loan, they lied to you. Okay? I ain't going into all of that there. Y'all know how that thing go. But anyway, you need to start getting out of these contracts, and I combine tonight's show with what Brother Creator Mutawa has to say to you, understand what's knocking at the door, and we need to stop shugging and jiving and get on down with getting out of these contracts, because we're going to have some very serious problems coming up in the future, and these people are going to go to calling in these contracts. You could have been paying on your mortgage, never missed a payment, up to date, and all this here. But the bank will say, well, look, we can no longer sustain the mortgage. We're going to need you to go ahead and pay this thing on off right now. And no money in circulation, what you going to do? You too. Okay. Now, so let's deal with more involving this bank situation, because this guy here wasn't the only one that done this. It was somebody else that done it, and we need to get more of this kind of stuff going on, because the banks are foreclosing on houses they don't even own. So this thing needs to be stopped. You understand me?
I'm Congressman Alan Grayson, and I represent Central Florida, an area hard hit by the foreclosure fraud crisis. Foreclosure fraud can affect anyone, whether you have a mortgage, are paying on time, have income, or not. The average foreclosure hearing in a Florida court is only 90 seconds. Mistakes are common, and fraud is rampant. Everyone is familiar with dealing with a big bureaucratic institution. What is happening is that these big bureaucratic loan servicers are charging fees inappropriately, refusing to talk to homeowners by putting their calls through to call centers in India, and then foreclosing with forged documents once the homeowner has been drained of all assets and even the will to fight. There's one set of rules for the banks, and another set of laws for everyone else. A servicer can ask for fees, it can demand payment, it can send you to one of those call centers in India, and it doesn't have to negotiate. And you now have virtually no rights as a homeowner. Here are four bizarre examples. First, last summer, Fort Lauderdale resident Jason Gradensky experienced what has tragically become an increasingly familiar process all across America. His house was sold at a foreclosure sale after a bank notified the Florida courts that Gradensky had defaulted on his mortgage. The foreclosure came as a surprise to Gradensky, according to reports from the Sun Sentinel. Not only did Gradensky not have a mortgage with the bank that sued to foreclose against his house, he never had a mortgage at all. Gradensky had paid cash for his home. Second, one house in Pinellas County, Florida, saw two mortgage foreclosure suits brought against it because the banks didn't know who had title to the mortgage. Third, one victim with a perfect payment record of all interest and principal was foreclosed on because of a $75 contested late fee. And fourth, Tim and Nicole West were victims of a predatory loan. In 2005, a bank threatened to sue the couple if they didn't sign a refinancing offer. Their loan servicer has subsequently raised their payments from $1,900 a month to $5,300 a month, with regular forbearance fees required in the tens of thousands of dollars. Finally, the servicer refused to accept payments from the family in the name of negotiating for a mortgage modification. But instead of modifying the loan, their servicer began foreclosure proceedings. The servicer used fraudulent documents to prove that it had the right to foreclose. Here's how it all happened. Securitizing mortgages was originally a way to take the cost of the mortgage off of a bank's books. From 2005 onward, the securitization chain went out of control, and Wall Street wanted as many mortgages as it could get as quickly as possible and as cheaply as possible. In order to allow it to pull out more fees at every link in the chain, these subprime lenders, trusts, and banks decided to cut as many costs as possible, including the cost of record keeping. They didn't keep good records, and they violated the laws mandating that they had to file records with the county clerk on who owned what mortgage title. Instead, the banks simply digitized mortgage titles into a privatized system called the Mortgage Electronic Registry System, or MERS. And it did the transfers by trading Excel spreadsheets among the banks and trusts, rather than endorsing the notes as required by their own contracts, by state real estate law, and by IRS rules. Today, MERS is the registered owner of a security interest in 60 million properties, or about 60% of the mortgages in the United States. In fact, 97% of the loans originated between 2005 and 2008 are in the MERS system. It appears that on a widespread and probably pervasive basis, they did not take the steps necessary to own the note, a borrower IOU, which means that in 45 out of the 50 states, they lack the legal right to foreclose. Thus, every trust now has questionable legal standing in foreclosures in the overwhelming majority of states. In addition, their records were poorly kept, so servicers are basically guessing that they have the right to foreclose when they do foreclose. Obviously, the banks do not want to grapple with the consequences of trillions of dollars of securitized mortgages having no legal standing to foreclose. So they have simply created a system where servicers hire foreclosure mill law firms, whose business is to forge documents showing or purporting to show that they have a legal right to foreclose. Some of these foreclosure mills have been featured in the New York Times, and so-called robo-signers, people whose names appear on thousands of affidavits. These appear despite obvious forgeries and overt omissions, and in cases where these people admit that they had no knowledge of what they were signing. The system is so organized that there is a company called Lender Processing Services, which allegedly has created the means to systematize this fraud. Lawyers use the LPS system to request which affidavits and documents they need. LPS then has document mills, where they can magically make an authorized vice president of whoever you need and send you backdated signed documents saying that you have the right to foreclose. Courts at first refused to believe this level of rampant fraud even exists, but more recently, they've started to sanction fraud against loan servicers. Here are some examples of signature forgeries used on documents filed with the courts. These are four clearly forged signatures of document mill employee Linda Green. Here are six signatures of Christina Huang. And here are three obvious forgeries of Taiwana Thomas. Finally, this is a mortgage assignment filed with the recorder's office, in which the foreclosing firm forgot to put the name of the assignee. So they instead put bogus assignee. The filing firm simply forgot to change the template for whose home, which family's home, they wanted to take. This is a factory of fraud. Servicers don't make money through routine servicing. It's a break-even business. They make their money on foreclosures at $6,000 for each foreclosure through their fee. When you combine the incentive to foreclose with systemized fraud, it's rampant lawlessness. Fraud is now a big business, and sanctioned in part through the government, as both Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are shareholders in MERS. We are approaching the point where the easiest way to make a buck is to steal it. The only way to end this plague of foreclosure fraud is to make sure that crime does not pay. I'm Congressman Alan Grayson. Thank you.
Okay. There you have it. Fraud. This fraud starts at the signing. Right there in the living room, wherever you sign the paper, that's when the fraud starts, because the man just told you there is no money to be made from having somebody pay a mortgage to a company. They're not making any money there. They get you when they foreclose on you, and you get discovered and trying to pay everything you can, trying to make the agents, and got as much money out of you as they possibly can, or sold the mortgage. And so they go back and resell the house again, and they start all over and then foreclose on those folks, and it's over and over and over and over again. But if you're in a home and that's your home, I suggest you keep your home by dealing with these criminals at the outset. If you got a mortgage, go to work. The first thing we want to look at is the fact that they're trying to collect from an all-caps fiction. All right, hey, we need to deal with that. We need to stop them with that. Send them a little letter, let them know, hey, you made a mistake. You assume that I'm a corporation. I need you to refrain from referring to me as a corporation. I am a man, and we know the corporation can only do business with other corporations, so you don't have to do business with a man because you signed with a man, okay? All right, let me open up area code 412. Come on in, 412.
Hey, hi, Brother Taharka. How are you?
Hey, Lisa, how you doing, sister? I'm just fine.
Good. Good. I just wanted to tell your listeners that I did your mortgage foreclosure packet, and I can't be happier with the results. As we speak, I'm waiting to, you know, receive some funding from them folks after I sue them. And it's interesting because I did, you know, the affidavits and all those things, and then I found out some more information, and then I sent them a letter about the violations, the federal violations that they did. And, you know, Tarka, when they want their money, they send you a bill every month. They send you a late notice if it's late, 10, 15. I haven't heard from them folks in almost a month and a half, not a peep.
Well, the thing is, they used to send rocks through your window. But when you start throwing rocks back the other way, they're stuck, especially if you start throwing the kind of rocks that's in Tahoga's getting rid of the mortgage package. You throw some real rocks, they're like, oh, my goodness.
They're running scared. Even the attorney that works for the foreclosure or the servicing company, they've stopped sending letters because I sent them a letter as well and letting them know, I know you've committed fraud. You do not have the jurisdiction to ask for this property of mine, and now I'm suing you too. And so, I mean, everything on this front is quiet as a church mouse. And it's just a matter of time. I wasn't sure if you were able to see that white guy on, that Caucasian guy in Philadelphia that he sued Wells Fargo Bank.
Oh, yeah, I went over
there.
Did you see that?
Oh, I thought that was fabulous. They were going to sell the chairs and the building.
Yeah.
They handed him a check.
They had to write him a check to get him down.
Yeah.
Every dime he spent in fighting them, they got to give him that. First, they got to give him punitive damages and all of that just to keep them from shutting the doors on the whole bank. And when they come there, they're coming to seize the assets. We're taking chairs, cables, computers, the water fountain. If you got it,
they were taking it
whoever
off.
The cash
they were taking
was
it
taking
off.
All of it.
You know, I have
love
to
it.
Say this to Taharka. Doing this, if you know, doing that elimination. I started. I'm reading. I'm not no dummy. I saw it, but it's empowering and it's freeing. It when you don't have to pay, you know, the majority of your money out every month, it allows you to breathe better. It allows you to look outside and say, "Ooh, it's going to be a nice day today." It allows you to just live.
That's
I'm
right.
being honest with you. It's free. I mean, I've always been a positive person, but it just allows you. I can literally live off of $12,000 a year without that mortgage. And I think that's something I could have made at 18. That I didn't need any college degree for that, you know. But it's just a wonderful thing, and I would encourage your callers to take it. And take advantage of it. Take and reach out to you and take advantage of it.
Yeah. Well, they are going to be getting involved. We have a couple of people that are finally free that have
mm-hmm.
gotten this thing in the past, and they have used it. I had one sister. She way back when we first started with this thing, and this was right, this was before I had gotten rid of the mortgage on my property, and the sister called me. She says, "I got them. They sent me the letter saying they're not going to foreclose. They're removing the lien and all this right here." And I said, "Well, okay. I need you to come on my show and give a testimony. I need you to send me some proof so I can put it up so other people can see that this thing is working." And I didn't hear from the sister, didn't hear anything. And then I got a call one day from another sister. And she reminded me of the young lady. I said, "Yeah, well, what a young lady at?" She said, she's deceased. I said, "What? She's deceased?"
Oh,
she said,
wow.
"Yeah. Her brother killed her and killed her mother. He was a schizophrenic and killed both of them." Yeah. And I said, "Wow. Why not? I didn't hear anything from the sister." I mean, she was supposed to be the first one out to come on here and tell us about how she had taken the Tahaga to get rid of the mortgage package, used it, and had actually
mm-hmm.
beat him and was free of her mortgage. And
mm-hmm.
but she never made it. And I didn't know what happened to the young lady. I was waiting and waiting and waiting, and
mm-hmm.
but that's what happened.
Wow.
But anyway, Lisa, you're right. It's when you remove a burden from you. You have this feeling of freedom. You have a feeling
mm-hmm.
to know that that's something that you don't have to pay anymore. I mean, you got people paying $4,000 and $5,000 a month
mm-hmm.
on a
mortgage.
Yeah. And they are thinking that because they got this job over here and I got this career over here and, you know, everything's fine. You know, I'm paying my bills all the time. But what you don't understand is the only security in a job or a career is as long as you're able to perform. When you're no longer able to perform, they simply don't need you. Now, if you don't believe that,
mm-hmm.
ask players in the NFL. Ask players in the NBA. Okay,
mm-hmm.
when you're no longer able to perform, they simply don't need you anymore. Then we have downsizing going on. We have
mm-hmm.
whole companies phased out. We have plants shutting down, releasing thousands of people unemployed and no place to go and all of this stuff. But if you concentrate on removing the burden of debt in
mm-hmm.
time when it's not war, you make ammunition in peacetime, get rid of that thing, no matter how good you pay it and how well you pay every month and how up to date you is with it, get rid of it. And so when something does happen, you do not have that burden of debt hanging on
mm-hmm.
you that you got to try to
mm-hmm.
hold on to a roof over your head.
Yeah. Well, it's the best thing since sliced bread that I've ever done. And I would recommend it to anyone that can do it. And you don't have to be no rocket scientist to do it either. You can do it.
Well, anybody can do it. It's just a matter of filling out the paperwork, and that's it. You done.
Yep.
You ready to going on to the next debt, student loan debt.
Yep.
A lot of sisters call me and brothers call me, and they tell me, say, well, I'm not too much worried about it because we doing a loan modification.
Yeah.
Oh, man, they tickle me, though. But I don't worry about it. I just deal with them and going on to the next one. I got another caller with his hand raised. I'm open up. Now, Lisa, you going to be doing a daytime radio broadcast?
That's our plan, and I haven't decided on if I can do it. If my schedule permits it, I will definitely be doing it. I've been looking at all the ancestors and our scholars and all these folks that have been a part of my life. I'm like, man, I can get them to talk to me on the show. I'm excited.
Yeah.
You know, I really want to do it. but I have to wait until I find out about this other situation before I commit to it, because I do not want to start it and in the middle say, you know what, Brother Tarka, I can't do it. I want to be committed, and I want to enjoy it and bring some education and some information to our people so we can walk this walk together. So I'm waiting. I'm just being a little bit more patient.
Okay. All right. Well, whenever you get ready to get on there and do your show, let me be a guest on there.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. Let me open up this other line here.
Okay.
850, come on in. Are you with us? Area code 850. You're on the air.
Islam, Mo.
Hey, Mo. What's going on?
I've got a question for your brother, Tahawka.
Okay, what you got?
This is Brother Jabir from Panama City, Florida. Okay, question is, is it ever too late to cancel a contract once the fraud is noticed, you know, keeping in mind that the contract was void ab initio to begin? How do we
there's no statute of limitations on fraud. No statute of limitations on fraud, no statute of limitations on murder.
Okay, so to reopen those cases that we want to address, we just need to go through the administrative process to correct it.
Hey, yeah, you can do that. You can the first thing we want to discuss is whether or not we got they committed an act of fraud. If you find fraud in there, then you can reopen it up and exhaust that administrative process on them, file that claim, and get them on up in the code. And if you got any buddies up in there trying to help them out, go ahead and lean them. And put it on the building, put it on the house, put it on the car, the boat, the wife, or jewelry.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Can
I go back to, like you said, there's no statute of limitations as long as we go through the process of exhausting
the
administrative. Okay.
Yeah.
And flagging them.
Yeah, go ahead and dig them up and look through there and they committed some acts of fraud, and we got to call it back at you. We filed a fraud. No statute of limitations on fraud.
Okay. Islamo.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, if anybody else got a question, go ahead and raise your hand. I'll open up the line, and you can tell me what's on your mind. We finna take another look at this foreclosure thing, and we definitely want to get here and show you about this gentleman that the Lisa was telling us about a few minutes ago. This guy here, let me see, where he at? He went in there and turned the tables on the bank. I think I've already ran him, but I'm going to see. Make sure, because we definitely want to hear from this guy, because this guy here, hold on, turn the table and yeah, we got him. Folks own the house, they don't know. Okay.
Well, good afternoon to you. Nice to see you. Up first today, fighting fraud closure. While the states take on lenders and Washington sits on the sidelines, fed-up Americans are taking back their homes. Case in point, the Earl family of Simi Valley, California. The bank changed the locks, kicked them to the curb. So they gave the bank a taste of their own medicine, changed the locks, moved back in. Can't make this stuff up. The Earls, just one of the millions of stories that are out there. This particular family, 9 children, 6 of them adopted, and they regularly took in foster kids until their lawyer claims they were wrongfully evicted. Like so many homeowners, the Earls did fall behind on their payments and were in the process of doing a workout, they believe, with their lender to try to get back up to speed. Now, according to the Earls, the banks, instead of conducting that workout, tried to pull a fast one, bilked them for tens of thousands of dollars more than they believe they owed. They got a judge to deny them their day in court, so there was never the need to illustrate the necessary paperwork, and basically were able to finish the dirty deed, change the locks, sell the house before anyone was able to put two and two together. Clearly desperate times as banks try to avoid dealing with their inability to prove who owns the house and the potential threat that they may have to reveal trillions or hundreds of billions in toxic loans that were stuck in the gut of the American taxpayer at Fannie and Freddie, not in compliance with the government standards that were set for those loans in the first place. But more importantly, desperate times for the families who no longer have a place to call home, while our politicians and bankers play dodgeball with the issue. The Earls, as we mentioned, are one family who is fighting back. Danielle Earl joins us today in her first national television appearance alongside her attorney, Michael Pines, and I thank both of you for giving us some of your time. Danielle, if you could, in brief, tell us in your own words what happened here.
Well, we were trying to make payments, trying to get caught up on everything, and we thought we were just about there. And when I called to get the amount that we still owed, it was a lot more than I thought it was. And then when I ended up making a large sum payment and the amount didn't change, I demanded an accounting for where all the money went. And instead of sending me an accounting, they sent me a notice of default.
Michael, is the story Danielle just told common in your experience?
Very common. It happens all the time. As bad as you think it is, it's probably about 1,000 times worse.
And let me just be very clear on what we're suggesting here, which is that there's let's say, I don't care what the number is, $25,000, $100,000 owed. You make a lump sum payment to that number, thinking that it's going to go down. You could look the next month, and the number hasn't changed. Is that a fair characterization, Danielle?
Yes, it is.
So
actually, the number went up.
Would you elaborate, Michael?
Well, the number went up. They kept increasing as she made payments instead of decreasing the amount they claim she owed. They kept increasing it.
And Danielle, did they ever address that?
No, they didn't. No, and when we got the notice of default, like he said, it was I had just talked to them on the phone a few days before, and somewhere in that 2 days, I owed almost an additional $20,000. So I don't know what happened over those 2 days, but it seems a lot more than just a regular payment missed. So something went terribly wrong.
And did
the banks aren't owed any of this money at all. They are owed zero, and so it's irrelevant to them. And what they do is keep increasing the amount they claim is owed in the hope that the borrower will keep sending them more and more money, become more and more frightened and intimidated, and that's what they keep doing. They never send her an accounting because they can't. It's impossible. There is no accounting. They're making it all up. And they just pull these numbers out of somewhere, and nobody knows where, and they keep claiming the homeowner owes more and more money. As Danielle will tell you, she sent them a lot of money, over $100,000. She kept sending the money, and every time she sent the money, instead of crediting it to the loan, they just increased the amount she said she owed and would never explain to her where the money she sent them went, how it was applied, when it was applied, because they can't, because they're just making it all up.
In this instance,
and as she
who's the bank here, and do they offer any explanation other than we're making it up?
No. They offered no explanation whatsoever, except they're making it up. They, of course, didn't admit they were making it up. We don't know who the bank is, and nobody knows when you say the bank. If you're talking about the lender, when you say there was an originator of this loan, and when you're talking about the bank, you would need to define that, because we're talking about financial institutions. And as Danielle will tell you, she began investigating this herself by going to the public records, going to the county recorder's office, and all these entities that she'd never heard of that had nothing to do with her loan whatsoever kept popping up. And the name of some of those entities are the G... Well, anyway, they were people nobody ever heard of. And so she was rude enough to ask them who they were, and they would never answer.
All right, listen, I want to ask you guys to hang on for 1 second. I want to introduce another voice to this conversation. From California to Florida we go. Last week we introduced you to Nancy Jacobini, another story we first were able to bring onto the national stage on this program. Nancy was struggling with her mortgage payments but was not yet at the foreclosure stage. So you can imagine her terror when the bank came to change the locks on her house. In her particular instance, you do not have to imagine that, because it all played out on this 911 call.
You hear somebody trying to open the front door?
Yes.
Ma'am?
My alarm is going off.
Stories like Nancy's leading Florida's attorney general to start issuing subpoenas demanding any and all documentation that could prove unfair and deceptive trade practices, unconscionable acts, and unfair competition. Matt Widener is Nancy's lawyer. He says to expect bombshell details once these documents see the light of day. Very specifically, Matt, what information do you believe will be disclosed?
I think we're going to continue to find that what these banks have done all across this country and the way that they victimized consumers all across this country is going to fundamentally destabilize real estate markets all across this country. You know, Dylan, I want to give you a lot of credit because you first brought this story to the nation's attention, and about the same time, Congressman Alan Grayson has been calling for attention on these issues. But I want to make it clear that you brought this to the attention of America. Since then, our Congressman Grayson has ramped up the heat and the pressure on these banks and institutions. We just had a press conference with Congressman Grayson at Nancy Jacobini's property, where he demanded investigations of all these institutions.
Danielle, what is Dylan. Hold on 1 second, Michael. Danielle, if you were to look at real life, aside from all the lawyers, aside from all the politicians, can you just give us a little bit of a sense of how disruptive this has been to your family and your life? And because this is not some sort of TV drama, this is the lives of not only you, but millions of Americans.
Oh, absolutely. And it has been terribly disruptive. For the last year, we have not known when we're going to be out on the streets, where we're going to go when we are. And just listening to the coverage that you just did, I had chills, and just because we live that too. And that was just it's just very scary.
Michael, go
ahead.
And
we're still...
Well, I just wanted to follow up on what Mr. Widener said, and I've heard of him, and I'm glad to finally see it put a face with a name. And I want to say this as clearly as I can and succinctly as I can, and I don't think I'm overstating the case. This is not only residential, this is commercial. And I say with a high degree of confidence that nobody in this country knows for sure who owns any real estate, residential or commercial. The only real estate that we can be sure of, where we know who the owner is perhaps somebody who paid off their property before the 1980s when securitization started, owned it free and clear, and passed it down from family to family. Other than that, in my opinion, any piece of property that was bought, sold, or refinanced from the early 1980s when securitization started until now, nobody knows who owns that property. Nobody.
The bank's argument, however...
And,
go ahead.
And according to Gretchen Morgenstern, who at the New York Times, who's been following this very closely, the total amount of money involved is $45.5 trillion, roughly twice the size of the U.S. stock market. And my opinion or suspicion is that lawyers will be arguing for the next 2, 3, 4 decades about who should pay for that $45.5 trillion, And I don't know that our economy can, I don't know that we have that much money that the government can fund that $45.5 trillion while they try to figure that out. And I'm sure that's what they're trying to figure out now.
Dylan, I want to step in here if I could.
Go for it.
I think it's important to note that the American people have already paid for this. What we need to understand is that when the federal government set aside $50 billion, 50 with a B, that money was intended to provide homeowners like Ms. Jacobini and Ms. Earle some assistance, some support to get those mortgages modified. Instead, what we're finding is the servicers pocketed that money. The American people gave these servicers a lifeline. We gave them support. We bailed them out. And what they're doing is they're choking consumers all across this country with that lifeline now. That's got to stop, and it's only because people like you are reporting this and Congressman Grayson are talking about it that now consumers all across the country are understanding just how fundamentally violated our rights are at this point in time.
At the same time, I want to address what Michael Pines just said, which was a large magnitude statement, to say the least, which is I think it's important that all of us, as we muster the courage to face the truth of the structure of our housing market, the collaboration between the banking system and the federal government, need to understand that as we resolve this, that this more than anything we have been through so far, including the entire 2008 financial crisis, may be the basis for which we will need a resolution trust to reform those banks that have been pretending to be solvent at the taxpayers' expense for years, and that it is this foreclosure chain that will ultimately reveal the insolvency in the large banking system that has come or has been covered up by the absorption of all that bad debt into Fannie Mae, into Freddie Mac, and into the Federal Reserve. Do either of you, I'll ask you this, Matt Widener, do you think that the attorneys general, that Alan Grayson, that our political leaders are prepared not only to look into this foreclosure crisis, which I view as a sideshow, which is a cover-up for the real issue, which is the housing finance chain coming out of Washington, D.C. in the banking system, do you feel like there's a political leader who is prepared to do the hard work of working this out in a way that is not destructive or antagonistic, but is honest and compassionate in the need to restructure this system?
Look, Dylan, they're not prepared to do that until our press continues to do what you're doing and now increasingly the national press is doing, and that is shining a light on all this. The quicker we come to grips with this problem and stop avoiding it and stop denying the major problems that exist within our financial system and the real estate markets all across this country, the quicker we'll be on the road to recovery. But the longer we deny this, both at the state levels across this country and at the national level, the longer this crisis is going to play out. This is an onion, and every time you peel back a layer, there's one more layer, and it just gets stinkier the closer you get to the core. So what Americans have to understand is this is not just about these homeowners that are in foreclosure. This is about every single American. This is not a Republican crisis or Democratic crisis. It's an American crisis. We all need to be part of this.
And it's a crisis of property rights, which is the core principle upon which this country was founded. It will be very interesting, especially on the political front, to see whether the Tea Party finally steps forward where they refuse to in objection to the financial reform fight and to step forward now to defend property rights in this country at a time when clearly they are in need of some defense. Danielle, my greatest sympathies for the suffering and tumult in your family as a result of this, and compliments to you for the courage to do not only what you're doing, but to come out in public and have the conversation with us. Mr. Pines, Mr. Widener, keep us posted on your legal efforts, and we will do the same here with our journalism. Gentlemen, have a good afternoon. Danielle, thank you so much.
All right, Moses, we're back. Now, what we're going to look at now is let's look at another gentleman. Because this guy here, I mean, he put the Billy Bob Bam on the bank for what they was doing. And we need more people doing this kind of stuff across the country because you just listen to what the guys had to say. We don't know who owned the property. So, okay, if you working hard, and this is just common sense to me, this is where I see it. If you got a job, you working hard, government working your fingers to the bone, you going to work early in the morning, your wife going in a different direction to another work, y'all trying to hold on to that house. And why not just stop for a minute one Saturday and send the bank a letter and say, could you please provide us a little proof of who owns this mortgage and who we paying this to, and could you clearly identify them? I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. You might just have some startling discoveries.
This morning from Philadelphia. Hey, Patrick.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing well. So explain this for us. You actually had a home that Wells Fargo came to you and said, look, you need to take out a homeowner's insurance policy that you don't think it's worth the value of your home. What did you do to Wells Fargo in response?
I told them I wasn't going to renew that policy that they were having me renew. I had an insurance policy on my house, which I had bought for $180,000. And Wells went to the insurance company and said that they wanted me to insure it for $1 million. And as you can imagine, the premium on a policy like that is through the roof. So I said, no, I'm not going to do it. And they said, well, we're going to do it for you. And they force placed an insurance policy for me that doesn't cover me. It only covers them. And that was the genesis of a dispute with them that's been running for nearly 2 years now.
Well, we did reach out to Wells Fargo, got no response from them. It sounds just like your experience with them, no response at all. Are you surprised by that?
Welcome to the world of dealing with Wells Fargo. No, I'm not surprised at all.
You also then found an interesting loophole, or not a loophole, but you found an interesting law dating back to the 1970s, which enabled you to work this angle, which is they needed to respond to you within 20 days. They needed to respond to you with written responses to your inquiries. They didn't do so, and therefore, you were able to place a levy on their office and foreclose on them?
That's true. There's a law called RESPA, and there's a 20-day window that they have to acknowledge receipt of your request, and then they have 60 days to actually respond to that request. And if they don't, it's possible for you to collect damages and even additional fines on top of the damages. So I took them to court here in Philadelphia through the municipal court system. I won a judgment. They ignored the judgment. The court advised them they had to pay. They ignored that court's advice, and so I got a sheriff's levy, and when they ignored that, I ordered a sheriff's sale on their branch in downtown Philadelphia, and they still weren't going to pay. But let me tell you, when the media coverage started and it was on the front page of the business section that their office furniture was going to be sold off to pay a judgment, I had a check in my hands the next day.
Brilliant. And I can imagine a lot of viewers this morning waking up wondering if they're in a similar position. Do you think that your story opens the floodgates for other people watching this morning?
I think it does. I mean, people ask me what I hope to get out of this, and one thing is if I wind up being the Johnny Appleseed of RESPA letters, I would absolutely love for that to be my epitaph. These RESPA letters are not difficult to write. There are numerous consumer resources sites on the Internet. There's government sites on the Internet that will help you with that process. And these RESPA letters, the banks are legally required to respond to them. So I would say to consumers, these are a very important tool if you're having a problem communicating with your mortgage lender.
Patrick Rogers from my home city of Philadelphia, good luck to you, and thanks for coming in and telling your story this morning.
Thanks for having me on.
Thanks, Patrick. Coming up here on the show, the budget protests in Wisconsin.
Okay, we got a caller with his hand raised.
Hey, Brother Hocker, this is Tyrone from Trenton, New Jersey.
Hey, Tyrone, what's on your mind?
Hey, look here. You know, you got me fired up here now. You know, with the gang killing around all around me and whatnot, and I want to save my life. I do want to do that process of discharging my home. I own my home in the Bank of America. You said something interesting. The first thing I want to do to calm my nerve down is to send a letter off and see who actually owned my house. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, when you send that off, well, they're gonna say, well, the bank or such a mortgage company. Okay, well, could you actually send me a copy of the contract? This is just something to throw out there, because, and the reason why I'm using that little scenario is to get these people started who's got these mortgages and nice and comfortable, because they are under the impression that a mortgage is designed to pay off during their lifetime. And they think, well, I'm going to pay this off and I own the house pretty soon. No, you don't. You got people who actually paid off their house, and you just listen to them. We done paid the house, cash, own the house, and then the bank came around and said, well, we got to foreclose. Because they didn't get rid of that stuff at the beginning.
Wow. And that's something. They never gave me no money. They say they did, but I never seen no money in my hand when they gave me the loan for this home.
Well, they told you that after signing. Well, the first thing they didn't do, and the first wrong thing that they did, was they did not, when they came to you at the signing, they were supposed to give you that big envelope that they have with all the papers you're supposed to sign, give you that envelope, and tell you to go and have your qualified lawyer look over these.
Right.
We'll give you 3 days or 5 days or a week, and when you're done, give us a call, and we're ready to sign. They didn't do that. They said, we're coming to the signing. They come to the house. They sit to the table, and probably about 4 or 5 of them. And they say, well, we're going to sign these documents. They start passing to you, sign here. You ain't got a chance to read nothing. You ain't never knew you still had no lawyer to look at nothing, and they ain't told you none of that. Then after you got through all of that, then they told you the bank going to give you a loan. Here's the documents to take to the bank. And when you went to the bank gave you some more documents to fill out. But if you notice, the bank didn't put their signature on nothing. So they already know
you. And you're right, because when the lady came here, she sat down at my table, and we sat on the paperwork, and I gave her the press like I was tired and exhausted. She said, we ain't through yet. And she got down to the 3 days version, wasn't it? She said, well, sign here, and you got 3 days to so on. I said, well, damn, can I read some of this stuff? But she had me continue signing. And me being the fool I was signing my life away. But I told her, I need to read some of this stuff. She said, well, you know, I'm going to leave all these copies here for you, but just sign these original papers. I'm going to take these with me, and I'm going to leave these copies behind, and you read them. I said, well, I'll be there. I felt something wrong. So I want to pat myself on the back for that. That's how I was signing. She said, well, I'm going to leave you this here copy. Right. I said, oh, man. So you got me signed up, and like I say, look, I'm about 55 years old. Look, I know I ain't got too long, and I'm sitting back here. These young guys out here think it's okay corral out here just shooting these people for nothing, and it's changing my neighborhood. We got a new man. He coming in. He not going to do nothing. But anyway, I want to know the first process, because like I said, I'm just like all the rest of your calls. They want to do it, but everybody kind of like nervous, you know, because you're talking about your investment. You're talking about your home, you know what I mean? So that's where I'm at, you know what I mean? I'm kind of nervous because, look, this is all I have for now. This is the only investment I have on this planet is my home and a car I have out there that I'm still paying on, you know? So
okay,
I want to go ahead.
You have to look at it like this. This is how you have to look at it. First of all, there's nothing wrong with asking a question.
Okay.
And that's what I started out doing. When I got just a glimpse of this thing, and I looked at it, and I had just done the driver's license thing, and I know the capital letter thing, and that's all I did. I sent him a letter and said, well, could you please refrain from referring to me as spell my name as a proper noun? As I started out, just asking politely to do that, but they never done it. And I said, okay, so that means that they can only do business with a corporation. I'm not a corporation. So I sent them a debt validation request, and they responded to everything on there except the last point, which was to send me a copy of your license to collect the debt in the state of Florida.
Uh-oh.
And then they sent me a letter back saying, well, you could go online and give us. No, I didn't ask to go online. I asked you. They sent me that. So they never would do it. So then I sent them a major bomb. And when they got that bomb there, it was like 19 pages, over 60 points. And they couldn't come out for the bail on it. And they sent me a letter from the mortgage company saying, we're moving the lien, we're not foreclosed. That's done deal. We'll forward this over to the county recorder's office and for confirmation, and they did that, and the county recorder's office sent me confirmation in the story and states there on the letter that no further action need be taken. So that's the end.
There you go.
And so it wasn't like I went in there and, you illegal, and all of that. We it's not done that way.
Yeah, you made humble.
Fill out the paperwork. Yeah, and matter of fact, when they sent this, when I sent the debt validation letter to them, and they sent back the stuff, I was sending them a letter back thanking them so much. I said, oh, I certainly appreciate your timely response. on this debt relegation letter. I'm so thankful for that. However, there was a quiet oversight. You seem to have forgotten to send me a copy of your license to collect the debt and stay in Florida. I said, there must be, you. I know you're busy, so that you must be just an oversight. I said, but I'll wait until you see.
But talk, I'm going to take it with your time. I know you got a brilliant show going on, but one more small question. Now, I had Bank of America debt collector call me, and they say they're Bank of America, and we're a debt collector, and you owe me my money for this month. I say, well, wait a minute. You're a Bank of America debt collector. We talking about two people. We talking about Bank of America itself on now, and you're a creditor for Bank of America, or are you up on it? I'm confused right there. Can you unravel that for me?
Well, they have these be little companies, that, and they be lying. They tell lies, but when they do that, the first thing you want to do when they call you, say, well, look, I'm going to need your name, and I need a mailing address to your company because there's a possibility that I could go ahead and cut you a check, and I'll have to mail it in. And they'll give you that information, and you need to know the president of the company.
Okay?
Now, once you get that information, write it down. But do not tell them to refrain from calling you over the phone. Don't do that. Just go ahead and write up a letter. Say, could you in the letter, please refrain from any further phone calls to this particular telephone number, which is your telephone number, in regards to this account, and put the account number down there. And I'll sign it, make a copy of it, and just send it to a regular mail. And count how many they got. Yeah, just send regular mail. And I count how many days that they got it. And then after that, if you got any more phone calls, don't worry about it. Just go ahead and write down the day they call, the time of day they call, and answer the phone. And get off the phone with them or whatever it takes, but just let them keep calling and just stack them on up. And you go, after about a month or two of that, then you go and contact your phone company and tell them to send you a printout of every call that's come in and out of your house. And every one of them calls that came from them, highlight that on that printout. Get you a copy of the letter that you sent them, attach that to it, and put them on notice of the fact that you are seeking damages for each one of these calls.
I'm going to need $5,000.
Yeah, and then get a copy of the Fair Debt Telecommunications Practices Act and attach that to that and address it and send it to the president and give him 7 days to respond before actually filing it into the courtroom and add up the total amount so that he'll know exactly how much to make his check payable to you for. And if he's and make sure you got your number down there so he can call you. And if you give him 7 days on it. If he doesn't call you in 7 days, then you do the whole thing over and send him a complaint form. And with 3 days left before we actually file it into the court, and, of course, once this hits the table inside the courtroom, we got total evidence of a violation of the Telephone Communication Practices Act. If you are asking for $30,000 or $40,000, the judge will order him to give you $30,000 or $40,000, but not to call you. In the meantime, they can negotiate that and say, well, look, we'll stop calling you. Don't file a case. We'll give you $15,000 or we'll give you $20,000 to make this thing go away.
Right, that's what I'm talking about. So, likewise, would I do the same thing? Like, certified, just send a regular mail to them asking the question, who owned the contract of my home?
Yeah, now, once you send that first letter, that's regular mail. But when
regular
you get
mail.
Them on that debt, then we go to certified mail with return receipt because we're getting ready to really squeeze that wall out that rock. And that's how you will do that.
Outstanding. Okay, I appreciate you letting me take up your time. I appreciate you letting me cutting in, too. I thank you very much.
All right, my brother. Appreciate you calling in. Peace.
Okay, now, peace.
Hey, code 412. You with me, 412? We got some little technical difficulties. On the switchboard, y'all bear with me a minute. I know y'all can still hear me on the line, but let me go ahead and check my okay, I think we got it straight now. Okay.
Can you hear me?
412. Yeah, I hear you loud and clear, sister.
Okay, I just wanted to tell the brother, don't be afraid. I actually enjoy it now. It's like a power rush when you do these things and you find out them suckers can be sued. Oh, my goodness. I absolutely love it. And the more I study, the more I learn, the more money I can get from them. It's amazing.
Oh, yeah.
So I would encourage your listeners not to be afraid. Just know what you're doing and go ahead and do it.
All right. Well, you're absolutely correct. And one other thing that people got to understand, because we are, when you talk about suing somebody, suing the banks and stuff like that, a lot of people be like, you know what, well, these people, they're pretty good at the bank. And no, they ain't. These people are criminals. What you're doing
yeah,
is...
Yeah, you called me that.
they've been robbing people. You'd be surprised at how the banks are robbing people, especially the elderly people.
Mm-hmm.
People who are on a fixed income, they got their money deposited in these banks, and the bank is running overdraft charges against these people. They mess around and get one little overdraft, and the bank will know that the bank know the people don't get their money but once a month, and they'll go to run the overdraft charges 3 and 4 times on these people. And when they get their next check deposited in the bank, they go to taking all that money from them people. $30
so
overdraft.
Sad.
Yeah.
That's so sad.
So you ain't doing nothing but getting back your money.
Mm-hmm.
Because they was putting that on me. And Bank of America didn't got sued so many times, but it got them in the millions and trillions of dollars because they were robbing and stealing and taking advantage of people so long till they have a master fortune. And they don't have no feeling. The people at the bank don't care about you. The people at the mortgage company don't care about you. And they ain't in the business of collecting mortgages. They're in the business of foreclosing.
Wow.
We got to understand that. We got to get out of one of these contracts, man. Get out of this game. Well, I appreciate you calling in, sister. I'm going to go into the second phase of this broadcast. We're going to deal with Brother Kredu Mudawa, prophecies. And we're going to start with the big one first, and then we're going to go down into the rest of this thing. This is some very, very important information that we need to know. Some of us may be familiar with the brother, but then there may be a few of us that's not. So we're going to start back in the day and listen to what this brother has to tell us. He is a shaman. He's a psychic, you name it. Very powerful.
The picture you're about to see was made in November 1993. Some of the contents may offend you and will definitely disturb you. Any actions taken as a result of seeing this film are at your own risk. Since the beginning of time, people have tried to decipher what the future has in store for them. To this end, they have consulted oracles, diviners, clairvoyants, astrologers, and fortune tellers to alleviate their fear of the unknown. In a remote village in southern Africa lives a Sanusi, a guardian of the African culture, a diviner and prophet who is burdened with visions and predictions of future events. Historian and high priest amongst African traditional healers, he has had prophetic visions since the age of 7. Just before he experiences a vision, colors start swirling around him. Then, as though he has been transported through time and space, he finds himself in another dimension. During these visions, he becomes the character featured. His name is Kredu Mudawa.
I'm asking all those who believe in the power of prophecy to listen to what I've got to say. I have said many strange things, but what I'm going to say now is stranger still.
Kredu has clearly seen Kennedy's killer. Perhaps you know him.
I was shown
a man called John Fitzgerald Kennedy. The vision told me a very strange thing. Three men were chosen to destroy this man of life. The murderers who killed Kennedy laid their plans not in the United States, but in a city that I once visited, the city of London. The man who shot President Kennedy from behind had fought in the Korean War. I was shaken when I realized that the man who had killed Kennedy was still alive. And he is also one of the men who planned the downfall of President Nixon, who are planning treason against President Clinton. The second man had also been a soldier or a policeman, and he is dead. And poor Harvey Oswald, that stupid warped maniac, he got killed because the man who really had the deadly gun which destroyed the president's head had to be protected at all costs. He is now a man in his 70s and is a great officer in the Army of the United States. He lives in the west coast of the United States. He is a strong man who loves to catch fishing. And when he hears my way, he will know that I'm talking to him. I see your face is big and strong, but fleshy now. Your hair is thinning. Your heart is weak, although you still see yourself as a strong man. I ask this man, what does he think he's doing? Killing your own flesh and blood. You are a murderer. And yet Kennedy had once helped you, you ungrateful white Judas. You hated red Indians and you hated black people. You wanted America to stay in a war that she was not bound to win. You son of a thousand monsters. And may as you die, the last face you see be my own.
A sinister murder was made to look like suicide.
Kennedy had had a secret lover, a beautiful woman, a lost woman, a woman of fire and ice, a woman called Norma Jean, whose other name was Marilyn of Monroe. As a warning to Kennedy, a group of murderers sent by the shadowy people who control things in the United States and elsewhere gave her a drink of a terrible medicine which caused such pain within her. It was like as if she was giving birth to a child. But they put a pillow over the beautiful one. They smothered her and they did not even give her the right to scream to her ancestors for mercy. She died a horrible death alone, she who shared Kennedy's dream.
Credo predicted Dr. Verwoerd's assassination 6 months before it happened, but no one believed him.
I told them that Dr. Verwoerd was going to die, and he would die from a knife wound. And one of the white gentlemen told me angrily not to talk rubbish.
You know, I never thought of it that something could happen like that, you know.
He warned that violence would erupt in Soweto.
And the closer we got to June, the more agitated he got. And I was involved in a lot of meetings with all sorts of people, trying to warn them that, you know, trouble was on the way. And not very many people were interested. They were more worried about bus strikes on the East Rand than any major trouble that may happen in Soweto.
A member of the Bophuthatswana government asked Credo to predict what would happen in the country.
I spoke to him, I think that must have been about December 1987, and I wanted him to predict what was going to happen the following year. He said, well, there was going to be a lot of upheaval where attempts would be made to unseat the government.
And that soldiers wearing red berets and grey uniforms would attack several very important people in the government of this land.
And on the 10th of February 1988, we had a coup here in Mogadishu.
Well, I thought he was so off the wall at those days, I didn't think it was worth my time.
There was never any doubt in my mind that if Credo said something, it had to be taken seriously.
No, he was quite right there, I'm telling you.
Credo foresaw George Bush's future role in the United States.
Credo correctly predicted that George Bush would become president. Not only was this said well in advance of the American elections, but even during an earlier period of time when Credo visited the United States, years before he threw the bones and said to George Bush that he would attain the highest office of the land. Clearly his voice must be heard.
Credo has made startling revelations about the critical role Princess Diana and Prince Charles will play in the future of Great Britain.
Princess Diana's star will actually overshadow that of her husband. People will look upon her as the Princess of Wales and him as the non-entity. Princess Diana is unwell because she is afraid to face the life that she is leading. She is a child who should have lived in a peaceful cottage, but she has been thrown into the glare of unsought publicity. She is like a little butterfly caught in a furnace. I am sorry for her, but I'm just as sorry for Charles, because I do not see him wearing the crown of the ancient kings of England. I am sorry for him because one day people will say that he was the man whose actions seriously weakened the British monarchy. The world will blame him for the disintegration of the British monarchy and nobility somewhere in the 21st century. It was wrong for Charles and Diana to separate. They should have stayed together. They should have tried to love and understand and forgive each other. But they did not. And as a result, they have set the wheels in motion for an incident in which the lives of Prince William will be seriously threatened. When that little boy reaches his 13th or 14th year, an attempt will be made to either kidnap or kill him. Madmen from Ireland, men who will be resisting the unity of Ireland, will be responsible for this. It will be found very, very soon, in about 5 years' time, that one of the royal children, I will not say which one, has taken drugs. They will be innocent drugs, but the enemies of England will blow this thing out of all proportion. In the great upheaval that will shake the world in the next 50 years, strange and completely unexpected things are going to happen. It is all this upheaval within the British royal family which will cause the breakaway of Scotland as the United Kingdom disintegrates and Ulster goes its way as Wales says farewell to Mother England and becomes a little state on its own, so will mighty Canada break away from the British Commonwealth. Let me tell you that two other countries will do the same. One of these countries will be Australia, and the other will be New Zealand. Australia will be torn away from the British Commonwealth by a man who will be enraged at the fact that the Commonwealth is becoming more and more dominated by non-white people. This man is already alive, but when his time comes, this man will be numbered amongst the greatest leaders that the English race had ever known. This man will confront the rising empire of Japan and China, a huge conglomerate of nations which will dominate the world with money. This man will confront those nations, and he will be not afraid of sending out his armies against them. By the middle of the 21st century, I see the Union Jack very, very strange in appearance indeed. Gone will be the cross of St. Andrew. Gone will be the cross of Ireland. The Union Jack will no longer be a Union Jack. It will be just a red cross on a blue background. In fact, by the end of the 21st century, Great Britain will have become part of Europe, a republic ruled from Berlin.
A disturbing vision reveals the origin of the AIDS virus.
There is a shadow gliding over this world. I had a horrible dream, a hideous vision of what it was, where it came from, and what it would do. I was shown a laboratory somewhere in the United States of America. I was shown scientists of several nations, French, British, and American, and Canadian, all collaborating in a hideous experiment, which was to introduce diseases which would wipe out whole armies, which would debilitate whole populations in times of war. And one of these diseases is the thing we call AIDS. AIDS is a man-made disease created as a weapon of war, a weapon of war which proved so terrible that it had to be abandoned. They could not destroy the virus. They gave it to a firm of toxic waste disposal. But by that time, a number of containers of this hideous disease, which were yellow on the outside of very thick metal with glass containers inside them, had already been taken to the land of the Germans, and there they had been stored in a secret place. Someone suggested that some of them should be dumped into the North Sea, not far from the west of Scandinavia. But others said no, they should be taken with other poisonous waste to their dwelt country and buried there. A ship came from Europe bearing these containers, and one of them had a fault in its lid. A little accident occurred and a sailor touched one of the yellow cylinders and was contaminated by it. through cuts in his hand.
Well, there have been reports now of this British seaman that went back to about 1954 when the chap died in England, and they went back and they had his tissues and they had blood and they went and tested it, and he was found to be HIV positive.
When the ship arrived in West Africa, the cylinders were taken up aboard a truck, and from there they were taken aboard a dirty looking helicopter. I could see them clearly what they did. This was contrary to agreement reached between this company and a corrupt African official, because the agreement had been that a hole should be dug very deep, but the official and his friends decided to pocket the money. They decided simply to dump the waste in an African lake in a country called Cameroon. Some of the local villagers started becoming sick, and then the disease spread into Central Africa. In the very near future, people dying of AIDS will pose the greatest security threat that the Western civilization has ever seen.
All life is a malady. If you can find the right rhythm, you can cure the patient.
The people who created AIDS have the effrontery to say that AIDS is a disease of African origin. Have the cheek to say that AIDS was created by God in order to put an end to promiscuity on this planet, which is absolute nonsense. What I find most horrifying is that the same people are telling us a blatant lie that AIDS is incurable. It is curable. It can be cured, but not by drugs. My visions tell me, in order to cure AIDS, sound in various forms must be used. If the sound is carefully calculated, the sound would be capable of destroying the AIDS viruses within the human being without endangering the human being at all.
Credo has had precise visions of how, when, and where World War III will begin and spread.
I am shown that in the very near future, Islam will rise like a lion throughout the world, and that a new war will break out in the Middle East, even bloodier than the war that was fought against Saddam Hussein. A great Middle Eastern nation, I think it is Iran, will go all out to acquire atomic power. Iran will buy terrible substances from China. Substances by which you can create atomic power stations. Substances by which also you can create atomic bombs and other hideous weapons of that kind. I see that there is a ship in the ocean. It is an old and ugly vessel which should have been sunk or scrapped long ago. And it is taking some radioactive substance to Iran. One of the containers will overheat and the ship will sink in the Indian Ocean. At first, the world will not be told about the sinking of this ship. Millions of fish start drifting, dead and lifeless, towards the beaches of India, of East Africa and Arabia. And the first inkling of this disaster that humanity will have will be when starving people in India and other countries nearby, they will eat this fish and they too will die. And it will be only then that the world will be aware people of the news will go to India to look into this disaster, and they will discover that many organizations were responsible for covering up this tragedy. In many parts of the world, people shall start eating each other. In the coast of Yemen and in the coast of India shall be found people who will die because they have eaten other people who have eaten the contaminated fishes, and there will be an outcry in the world, and the violence and the warfare will spread not only in the Middle East but also throughout North Africa as far away as Spain.
President Clinton will unwittingly play a crucial role in precipitating World War III.
This terrible accident involving the radioactive ship will either take place during President Clinton's second term of office or late in his first term of office. He will overreact and unleash war and sanctions against Iran. The great president laid the bloody foundation for what must surely be the greatest religious war that the world has ever seen, and that war is not far away in the future. This man, upon whose shoulders the iron hand of history rests so heavily, oh, Bill Clinton, I wish you could see what I see. I wish you could see what lies in your future. I am sure that there will be two violent attempts on President Clinton's life. That one of these attempts will be made upon the president by someone with a remarkably dark skin, someone who will be either an African-American or a Hispanic person. The president will survive both these attempts, but there is another form of attack which will follow this, and this one will actually shatter the president's life. It will be started by a woman, because this president's greatest enemy are going to be women. A woman will come very close to destroying Clinton's career as the president of his country. More than this, I do not wish to say. After President Clinton, there will come one other male president in the United States who will rule for two terms and be killed in an accident. After that president, there will come a female president who will be a red-headed woman, a former actress of French ancestry. This woman will become the ruler of Canada, the United States, and Central America, which three great masses of country will come under one leadership. No longer will there be the United States of America. No longer will there be the Dominion of Canada. The whole country will simply be called the American Federation.
A powerful German leader will unite Europe and Great Britain.
Somewhere in the early years of the 21st century, Europe will become one republic. She will fall under the shield of Germany. because a mighty ruler will emerge in Germany. In fact, he is already there. He will emerge and he will rule Germany with a rod of iron. And he will achieve with cold cunning what Hitler tried to achieve by brute force. And oddly enough, this brutal man, this second Hitler, will be hailed as the savior of Europe, because he will strengthen the economies of the different states that form Europe, and they will call him the new Bismarck.
The United Nations will crumble, and in its place there will be a new League of Nations.
Very, very soon the United Nations is going to fall into pieces. In Europe, there will come a new league whose flag will be blue with a large four-pointed star in the center. I see this flag waving with menace over Africa and over the Middle East and over India and over Australia.
Millions will succumb to the appearance of a man who will be seen as their savior.
There is a young man. His eyes burn like those of a god. He has got a little mustache. He wears the white turban of an Ayatollah. He is a man of Iran. He is the man who, within the next 20 years or so, will shake the world to its foundation. He is at present in his late teens or early 20s. He is a great admirer of Saddam Hussein, and at one time they once met. This man is the man about whom many prophets have spoken in the past. Some call him the Antichrist. In Africa, they call him the Red Destroyer, the Mushiki Wadamu, the Lord of Blood. This is the man who is going to lead the rising hordes of Islam, whom future generations will call the Shining Sword of Allah, who is going to fight, shed blood, and destroy cities to restore once again the glory of the caliphs. He will know himself as the Wahhab al-Rashid. He will know himself as al-Timsah. It is this man who is standing in the shadows at this moment, who is going to carry on where his admired godfather Saddam al-Hussein has left off. I wish the leaders of the United States should be aware of the existence of this man, because as they are humiliating and ill-treating the Muslims, they are only giving strength to this man who's going to stand in a battle tank above the ruined cathedral of Christendom in Greece, who is going to extend the influence of the Lord Muhammad from the western shores of India to the rock Jebel al-Tariq, Gibraltar. And against his anger and against his might, not even the mightiest hydrogen bombs will prevail. Salam alaikum, al-Khalif, al-Saif, ul-Allah, Sword of God, my eyes see you, and my eyes are frightened of you. In the next 4 or 5 years, Muslim fundamentalists will try to reclaim the entire empire which was once held by the Saracens. They will claim Spain as their country. They will claim Portugal and all of North Africa. And some of these fundamentalists are going to decree that no ship should ever pass through the Straits of Gibraltar without money being paid to them. This dangerous movement will be based in the country called Morocco or Algeria. And one day, a group of these men in a number of small boats will attack a beautiful cruise liner of Greek origin, and aboard her will die several people who are well known in the American film world today. The attack upon the ship will bring down the rage of the United States and the United Nations upon the perpetrator. And one of these men, whose name will be Yusuf, will commit a serious outrage in a European city. He will cause a tremendous explosion which could damage the Eiffel Tower.
The future of the Catholic Church will hang in the balance.
In Italy, the Pope will be murdered and the world will be told a lie that he had died a natural death. I see clearly how His Holiness will meet his end. It will be in a procession inside a church, a great church, and a murderer disguised as a priest, in fact, a real priest, will approach the Pope and using the back of his crozier, which he will be holding, will strike the Pope in the leg, apparently by accident. And a tiny device at the bottom of the crozier will inject a tiny ball of poison into the Holy One's leg. And the Pope will die. The Catholic Church will split down the middle and down the middle again. The Catholic Church will never have a Pope again for about 20 years or more. And then a group of militant women, female terrorists, will take up arms and forcibly install a female as the Pope in the Vatican.
Shocking experiments are still being conducted.
I am shown something that is taking place in some laboratories in the Far East. Experiments which are aimed at creating a new race of people which can survive underwater. The men and the women conducting these experiments are torturing dolphins. Dolphins are being forced to act as surrogate mothers to human fetuses. And metal implants are being put into them. These people who are doing these things should be exposed to the anger of the caring world. These experiments and others like them should be stopped.
Crashing economies bring strange new devices.
People are going to lie and cheat. People are going to steal. People are going to exploit others as never before, all in the name of free enterprise and business. Very, very soon, I am shown, there is going to be a serious money crisis in the Western world. This crisis will affect first the United States with heavy loss of jobs and the crash of the dollar. this will lead to similar situations in Europe, in Asia, and especially also in Japan. This is going to last about 5 years. And I say that this thing will come before the year 1998. There will be more homeless people in the streets. This will result in new types of buildings being invented. Buildings which will be erected very quickly and which will house as many people as possible, but with the minimum of comfort. Your vehicle and your neighbor's vehicle will be built to a parquet, so that these vehicles can be attached to a huge central pole, like a giant pillar, vehicle above vehicle, forming a building in which you will live. It will be the solution to humanity's living problem. Somewhere in the middle of the 21st century, a radical change takes place. The streets are no longer coated with tar, but with a certain type of metallic composition. And the car floats in the air with a tiny little aerial pointing downwards towards the street. And it is this aerial which lifts the car into the air. So long as the car is in contact with this metallic road, so long shall the car float. People will travel in very huge aeroplanes, bigger than anything that we have got today. Now, these aeroplanes will be strange in that they will be able to travel not only in the air, but also on top of the sea and also under it. These aeroplanes, which will be built by the Japanese, will have gigantic wings at the back, where great boosters will be housed. And these aeroplanes would rise into space, like space shuttles, in the very near future. And I say 10 years from now, people will no longer buy clothes. They will have a beautiful little machine, small enough to stand on their kitchen table. And from this machine, they will be able to make their own clothes. The machine will squeeze out tubes of material, which you can change at the press of a button to any color. And you will make any attire that you choose, no matter how outlandish.
The chosen race joins the Orient to find the promised land.
As we go deeper and deeper into the womb of the future, for about 50 years, the nations of China and Japan and Malaysia and many islands in the Pacific will dominate the world. The former world powers will fade away. Japan will use the Chinese as the blade of her sword. And using this sword of hard work, of technology, and of money, the nation of Bushido, Nihon, will take vengeance for what was done to her people in Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Japan will be joined by one nation, and I'm surprised to name this nation, the nation of Israel. They will abandon Palestine. They will abandon Jerusalem and carve a new nation of Israel in the eastern border of Egypt. And there, Israel shall become part of the Federation of Middle Eastern countries.
There are people thought to have died who are still living.
There are those who say that the great Elvis Presley is still alive. Please, they should let that great man, that misguided soul, rest in peace. He died. Let me tell you about people who are said to have died, but who lived long after their supposed death, whose survival will affect our future very, very seriously. One of these people is the man called Adolf Hitler. Adolf Hitler never died in Berlin, neither did his wife Eva Braun. He escaped with a large group of scientists and military officers. They went to South America. Eva Braun is still alive. In my visions, many years ago, I saw two girls. These were the children of Adolf Hitler. One girl's name began with an O, and the other one began with a K. A whiskey or something like that, and the other one was called Kristen or Christelle. These girls survived. They are there. There are Nazi groups in Europe who are aware of the fact that Hitler left children and grandchildren when he died. And these descendants of Adolf Hitler are going to create great havoc somewhere in the middle years of the 21st century.
Okay, Moses, we're back. That was Credo Mudua's prediction, and giving us some keen insights on some things back in the past, and that we have thought, I've heard many, many times from many different sources that Hitler did not die. And but I never got any confirmation on it, but this is the first time that I had ever heard somebody come from a prophetic vision angle tell us this, tell us that he didn't die. And he did escape, because I look at the situation with the digging of tunnels and stuff of this nature, and it was very, very easy for him to do, even though he was in an underground bunker, an escape chamber, because he knew that everybody was bearing down on him, and the objective was to kill him. So any wise man would have planned the area of escape, and that is exactly what he did. And his body was never found, and but they just declared him dead because they blew up the bunker. But they blew up the bunker long after he done gone. So he did get away. But anyway, in my opinion, based on what I've seen, I want to look at Credo's information concerning the beginning of time. And I have examined this over and over and over a few years ago, and I thought it's something that we wanted to bring to the table today so we can look at this thing. This information is quite incredible. But nevertheless, on this broadcast, we let it all out. And so we're going to go back to the human origin. And let's pay attention to what the guy has to say, okay? So y'all sit
on
tight for a moment.
Foothills of Mount Kilimanjaro. This is the story, a story you find throughout Africa. There was once a time when the blue sky was invisible, when the whole world was covered with mist, when you could not see the sun as it is now. You only saw it as a splash of white light moving slowly across the sky. At that time, there was an eternal drizzle every day of the year. At that time, people could not see the stars. People only saw the trees growing, trees which were very, very big. There was no desert at that time, only jungle everywhere where you went. At that time, say, people were what we call in Zulu, ngubili, a human being was both male and female in one body. And out of the sky, one day, came terrible objects. They were like gigantic bowls made of huge gleaming gold. They were shaped like bows without strings, and they were bigger than the biggest mountains. They came out of the sky bringing great noise, black smoke, and fire with them. And out of those huge objects came them. At that time, sir, human beings could not speak. We had no gift of language at that time. And people had, however, great mental power. A man would go into the bush and, using the power of his mind, actually call out an animal which he wanted to hunt and kill for his children. And the animal would appear and kneel down before the man, and the man would kill the animal and take it home. But when the Chitauli arrived in Africa, they told our people that they were gods and that they were going to give us human beings great gifts on one condition. We had to worship them and accept them as our creators. Some told our people that they were our elder brothers and that this earth had produced them generations ago. And they said they had come back to the green womb of their mother, and that they were going to make us into gods. What they did, they created a very strange pair of caves in the land. They dug two caves. In one cave was a green light, in another cave was a red light. And they drove human beings into these caves. And each human being had to choose which cave the human being wanted to go into. And those who went into the green cave came out as women. And those who went into the red cave came out as men. And then the talkers, the Chitauri, told our people that now they were perfect. But the moment the first men saw the first women, a terrible row erupted. The women hated the men because they looked between their legs and they saw what they thought were snakes dangling between the legs of the men. And the men hated the women because they looked on their chests and they saw these big things. What they were, they did not know. And then the Chitauri laughed. It was to them a very, very big joke. And then the Chitauri said, if you serve us, you wretched little human beings, we are going to make you into gods. And the human beings agreed to serve the Chitauri. And the Chitauri gave human beings a second gift, the gift of language. People started talking with their tongues where they had talked with their minds before, and there was a big rubbish starting again, because this man did not know the language of that man, and when this man greeted that man thought that he was being insulted, and so a lot of murder and culpable homicide started taking place all over the world. When our people were given language, they found to their horror that they had lost much of their mental power. They had paid a terrible price. But the Chitauri were now the masters of human beings. They made them the human beings to go into holes in the ground and to mine metal, gold, copper, tin, all kinds of metal the Chitauri forced our people to mine. And the people were very unhappy because they couldn't cope with the new sexual differences which were there now between men and women. And then from amongst the Chitauri came a very good female Chitauri. Her name was Mai Nzarantwari Samahongo. Mai Nzarantwari Samahongo was the senior wife of the terrible chief of the Chitauri, Umbaba Gorontwari Samahongo. She was sorry for human beings, this great reptile lady. She said to the poor people, "Ow, you are unhappy." And the people said, "Yes, great one. We go into the holes every day. We dig the stones and we bring it to the gods. But we are not happy." And Mai Nzarantwari stretched her scaly chin and began to think and to think. She was terribly ugly. Her eyes were awful, like lights in the darkness. But she had mercy in her heart. And she taught the men and the women how to make love. And she said, "Look, we divided you into males and females. Now this action is going to bring you together." Ah, but it did not, because anyone who receives the gift from the Ntwari, the children of the python, is always in trouble. What happened was that when one guy slept with his wife, he didn't find her much, so he went to steal another guy's wife, and there was a big remorse, as we say in African, starting. So men started stealing each other's wives and each other's girlfriends, and women started stealing each other's husbands, and there was a big nonsense in the land. And King Umbaba, the terrible lord of the Ntwari, the reptile people, said, "Look what you done, you stupid old woman. Now these people, they are making such a noise. Listen to all that screaming in the bush. They are busy making love there, and our gold is not being dug, and you are responsible for this." Nzarantwari thought and thought and thought and thought, and then she got a plan, and she said, "I will make them stop. When they make love to each other, the female is going to get pregnant. And when she is pregnant, the male is going to leave her alone, and that noise in the bush will not be so disturbing to you, my lord." And Umbaba said, "You had better. There is no production here." And so all the women in the world was pregnant, and Umbaba was furious with his wife. And so it went on and on, until one day Nzarantwari activated a black hero called Mweru. And Mweru challenged the great chief of the serpent people to a fight, and he cut off the royal penis of the king of the snake people, and that caused a big war. Mweru ran away, but Umbaba, the terrible chief of the people, caught him and arrested him and brought him to his village. And there the great chief Gorontwari Umbaba said, "Look, you cut off my thing, and I have replaced it with one made of gold, and I can't make love to my wife anymore. You think too much, you wretched little human being. Now, Umbaba had a terrible nail in one of his hands, a claw. And with this claw, he drove the claw into poor Mweru's nostril, making a terrible hole into his brain, and he started drinking Mweru's brain, and then he threw away the corpse. To this day, sir, we believe that the people, the Chitauri people, they eat human brains. And strangely enough, scientists have found skulls where the human brain has been removed and eaten by someone or something.
Well, the hearing you speak here, so many things come to mind. First of all, you're saying that telepathy was the key form of communication before the Chitauri, the reptilians came.
Yes.
And I guess it's like a muscle. When you use it, it gets more sensitive and more powerful. So the more you use your telepathy, the more powerful your mind got. And then when language came, it almost brought us into this three-dimensional world and disconnected us from that mind power that you had before.
Yes.
And it's also interesting that the story that you talk about, the language being given, and then the different languages being given, of course that turns up in the Old Testament, in the Bible. It turns up in stories all over the world about the fact that we were divided by language so we couldn't communicate. And as someone who publishes books, I know today how difficult it is to communicate through books when you've got endless different languages. So
okay, Moses, we're back. Quite extraordinary information put out by brother Credo, and this is some amazing stuff. I ran into his information several years ago, and I got the entire thing, and I took it in back when I was doing that kind of stuff. Put it down on a DVD disc so that I could hear the whole thing. And I must tell you, it was quite fascinating to listen to this guy come from the beginning of time and go all the way up onto the current day and age, including telling the story about how he was abducted in Africa. By these beings, and they conducted the experiment on him, and they eventually released him, and he was telling the story about we are under the impression that these things are come from someplace else, and but based on what I'm looking at, maybe some of them do. But from what I can see, based on the investigation that I have had, they have underground bases and all this stuff all over the world. There have been incidences where these, what they would call them UFOs, come out from under the ground, or come out from the ocean, and have almost knocked over ships coming and going. And but don't want to get down into all of that. Experiencing a little connection problem on the internet, but if you all bear with me, those of you who are checking this out on the internet and in your chat room and stuff, and working on it, try to get this thing settled. I don't know why it's you know, I'm having to go through this every day. I think I come under a tremendous amount of attacks on a daily basis, and this has been going on for quite some time. Today, I'm completely, totally locked out my Facebook account. It's been hacked or something, and these are constant attacks, as I attempt to deliver this kind of information to you, which totally goes against everything that America say that we should be knowing about, from the mortgage to the student loans to the ancient story, the church, you name it. We only want the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, because it is the truth that can set you free. You can't be set free with a lie. You can only be in bondage by lies. So they, you know, I can't go along with that. People want to be free, and so this is what we do. We deal with freedom and truth. Okay, period. This is all we deal with. Nothing but the truth. So we're going to go on to the next thing here. I'm going to jump around a little bit. We don't have this thing in order with the brother, but we're going to, in my opinion, we're going to bring out the next valuable piece of information that he put out. So I'm going to bring this out. This is an interview with David Icke that he had, and I want to hear what he got to say on this
operation. A man who traveled through time and accidentally killed a young boy who turned out to be himself in the past, and so he no longer existed anymore.
There's an indication on the necklace, I know, around the back, that the earth is round. One of the symbols is indicating that, or a sphere.
Yes.
But I wonder what you think, Credo, of what is taught to children and students all over the world, in the universities and the fancy academic centers, that actually we are now at the cutting edge of human evolution in terms of technological knowledge and knowledge of the world and the universe. And in fact, back in the ancient world, in Africa and North Africa and all over South America, they were just a primitive people.
Please, that is a lot of poppycock. In fact, in my long investigation into our past, I can tell you proudly that our ancestors were 20 times cleverer than we are. What I feel and what I think is that in the past, human beings were cleverer than we are today, and that human beings knew more than we know now. We are not progressing, Mr. Icke. We are simply rediscovering things that were known by better men and better women than we are thousands of years ago. I wish to offer you proof of this, some of it at least. Say, there are things that I have found in my travel through the world, things that prove to me that our ancestors were highly advanced in chemistry. Our ancestors had become so clever that they could take science and reduce it to such a simple level that they were able to help hundreds of starving human beings after some traumatic happening in the past.
Let's concentrate on some of the images on the
yes.
necklace and the symbols, because that leaves no doubt that a lot of knowledge has been around for a very much longer time than we are ever told. First of all, on the hand, I'm seeing the eye. Now, the all-seeing eye and the symbol of the eye is one the Illuminati use all the time. And it's one, of course, that was a very big symbol of ancient Egypt, the Eye of Ra and what have you. Why is that eye there on that hand?
That represents the terrible eye of the Chitauri, the eye which sees everything, the eye which knows everything. It is said that when a Chitauri dies, he passes his third eye onto his next of kin. And to the Chitauri, an eye is a very, very powerful symbol. This is the eye of the Chitauk. But there is more to these things. Here there is a hole that goes right through the copper. Now, if you put water in that hole, you end up with a simple magnifying microscope, and you can see gems through that water. The magnification is amazing.
The great symbol is pointed out again and again on the dollar bill, which is on the reverse of the Great Seal of the United States,
yes,
put on there by the Illuminati, a president called Franklin Delano Roosevelt, is the all-seeing eye. And so is it your understanding that the all-seeing eye, when it's used by the Illuminati, represents this third eye of the Chitauk?
Yes, I do. I really am sure of this. Why? Because in Africa, even ordinary human eyes are regarded as very powerful devices of magic. If an African shows you respect, he mustn't stare at you, but he must stare at a point beyond one of your shoulders. Now, we call this Klonipa, which means deny me your eyes. We believe that when emotionally roused, an ordinary human being can inflict great damage on another human being by the unseen fires that emanate from one's eyes. We believe that a Zulu warrior must never allow his dying enemy to look at him. For example, when a Zulu was killing an enemy, he used to cover that enemy's face with his shield to prevent the enemy looking upon him with his eyes and putting a curse upon him.
It's interesting, people who've experienced the Chitauk, the reptilians, in relationship to the British royal family and others at various rituals, have said that at the point of sacrifice, the point of death in the sacrifice, that these reptilians stare into the eyes of the person dying, which would kind of fit why those warriors were very concerned about that.
Yes, sir.
What are they doing then?
We have got a ritual, which covers many fields. A ritual which is called ukuthatha umoya, taking away the soul, where when a king is dying and he is fighting to pass on his knowledge and his courage to his successor, he would demand that the successor should stare heavily into the dying king's eyes. And also, when a creature is being sacrificed in Africa, whether it's a human being or an animal, that creature must be stared at by the sacrificer so that its spiritual characteristics are drunk in by the one sacrificing it. I have seen many times on hunting expeditions in Kenya, Tanzania, and other parts of Africa, when a lion is just about to breathe its last, the hunter, one of the hunters, will stare into the lion's eyes until the lion's eyes start glazing in death. It is drinking in the soul. We believe that the eyes are not just for seeing, that they are for taking as well.
Now, on the hand here is what looks like the symbol of the constellation of Orion. What's the significance of that?
Sir, people throughout Africa believe that the original human beings either came from Orion or the gods for whom Reed, the Chitauli, and many other alien nasties actually come from that constellation. We call it the constellation of Umhambi, the one who travels very, very far away. And we call this constellation also the constellation of Matsieng, the giant who was sent by God to this earth to create the first human beings. Matsieng was accompanied by a male lion with a very black mane, and he was also accompanied by his dog, and he traveled throughout the world. He first created the first race of human beings, and they were so stupid in appearance that he buried them alive in a cave, and then he...
Okay, well, let's check out some more of this stuff here.
Say, I have seen the Chitauli. I have smelt them. I've had personal experience of these. And there are people who claim that these creatures are gods. There are people, sir, who claim that these creatures are experimenting on us. That is a lot of rubbish. These creatures are harvesting us. These creatures are not aliens, Mr. Ike. These creatures are sexually compatible with our women. And what does that tell you? It tells you that they came from here. They are part of us. And this makes them all the more dangerous. They know us very, very, very well. They know the great weaknesses of our minds, just as they know the great strengths of our minds. They operate in what I call the gray area of human existence, that side of our lives which we don't want to acknowledge the existence of. They create... African tradition says that the Chitauli, where they engaged God himself in a terrible war, and God defeated them, the real God, Nkulunkulu, the creator. God defeated them, and he closed their mouths so that they are unable to talk or to eat food anymore. But we are told, sir, that the Chitauli fatten on the energy that we human beings give them. They make us to fight each other. And when the whole land is drowning in death and fear and terror, when hundreds and hundreds of people are angry and afraid, the Chitauli get fat because they eat that what we call the dark power, which is brought about when human beings destroy the planet on which they live.
They feed off human emotions.
Yes, sir. Very, very intense human emotion. We are told, for example, that if you see a Chitauri walking through the bush or just standing there and looking at you, and you are accompanied by your wife or your girlfriend, you must immediately make love to that girlfriend and release as much emotion as possible, and the Chitauri will be pleased and will walk away from you and not harm you. And another thing, sir, we are told that the Chitauri eat energy which is generated when hundreds of human minds or one human mind starts thinking at certain levels. We are told that the Chitauri want us to think at certain levels.
Certain wavelengths.
Yes, sir. And they reward us with long life. May I ask you, sir, have you ever thought as a thinking person, why is it that in the great universities of this world, you find professors who think at certain levels and who live unnaturally long lives? Albert Einstein, Raymond Dart, Robert Broom, all these professors live a long, long time. And my aunt mine, the last Sanusi in South Africa other than myself, is as active as a young girl, and yet she's close to her 99th year of life. My stepmother, Rose, she has lost nearly all her children, and she is still alive. Extreme longevity is the reward with which the Chitauri reward you if you think.
Okay. Well, all right, got some information on that. Longevity of life for elevated thinking. Quite interesting. And I'm glad I ran into that information there. Now we're coming from a different angle with brother, and I want to see what he has to say in regards to this information.
When you look around you, when you look around you in South Africa, what do you see? You see dark clouds sitting upon this land. You see sickness in the form of AIDS, which has destroyed many black families. You see new sicknesses appearing. Last year, we were facing the grey ghost of AIDS. Last year, we were facing something that has devastated whole communities in my country. If you drive through the shanty towns of South Africa, if you drive through the settlements of our people, again and again you come upon abandoned homes. Again and again you come upon houses which were built and never completed. You also come upon homes which were completed, but where now nobody lives, because all the people in those homes are dead. AIDS has cast its shadow wide over South Africa, as it has cast its shadow wide across many parts of my country, Africa. AIDS has moved like a silent monster devouring young and old alike, devouring whole dynasties of great families. Now, we are seeing a new disease appearing in South Africa. This disease is called pig flu or swine flu. Now, I ask myself, where do these diseases come from? These diseases which destroy our people without mercy. These diseases against which there really is little protection. Where do they come from? AIDS takes a long time to kill its victims. But swine flu kills children and young people within a few months. Ghosts of darkness and despair walk through my country. But our forefathers say that when night is fallen upon the land, when dark clouds are in the sky, you, O people who care and who think, should light little lamps of hope to shine in the darkness. You who cry, you who have buried your friends and your relatives, must lift your head up with courage and say, we shall not be defeated. You must lift up your head with hope and say, here, God is my candle of hope. Here, God is the little flame I've lighted in my heart. Man was born in hope. Human beings were born in hope. And they must sustain that hope, no matter how dark the night, no matter how angry the storm. Mm-hmm. My friends, I believe in the teaching of my ancestors that human beings are dreams. Human beings must live with dreams in their hearts. Human beings must look at the present darkness and look beyond the darkness and say, although there are tears in my eyes now, tomorrow my feet shall dance with the victory. Mm-hmm. Human beings were born to conquer evil. My friends, 2 months ago, I lost one of my children. One of my 2 daughters, Nandi Teresa, passed away after a brief illness, which I understand was the new type of tuberculosis, which, like AIDS, is sweeping through South Africa. I wept. I cried, but I said in my heart, I shall light the lamp of hope in my soul. In this brooding darkness of loss and pain, I shall dream. I say, people should be allowed to dream, to let hope fall like gentle rain upon the dark deserts of your heart. Mm-hmm. We must be allowed to dream. Last year, Virginia and I started to build a hospital. A hospital we are building to help the many suffering people who come to us for assistance. AIDS is a deadly disease, but AIDS can be defeated by determination and by hope. There are plans in my country which enable a person with HIV to live for a number of years, to continue functioning, to continue working for a number of years. And we have begun to build a house of hope. We have laid the foundation for a temple of hope. But the job is big and terrible. We need to build more. We need to construct more. We need to do more as more and more new diseases invade our country. Last year, when gentle people helped my wife and I with money in what we are doing, there was no swine flu in South Africa. Last year, there was no cholera in this land, but now there is. I ask myself, where do these illnesses come from? Where do these diseases come from? And then I rebuke myself and say, you are thinking like a stupid old man. Your ancestors tell you that when a dragon has invaded your land and is eating your people and destroying your villages, stop wasting time and asking where does this beast come from that is eating our people. Take the spear of courage and go and confront this dragon. We must confront the dragon of disease in South Africa. We must confront the dragon of destruction. And I know that with courage and calm determination, we can conquer it. The duty of a human being on this planet is to confront evil, fight it, and drive it back into the darkness whence it has come. We shall do that. Let me thank all those who have helped us. Let me thank you, friends, who heard over the internet about the difficulties we are facing. Let me thank you. But I say, the battle is not over yet. The war is not yet won. The darkness still lingers over the country. It's got to be expelled. Thank you.
Living in a constant state of fear has never been good. Many of us fear the Internal Revenue Service. We don't know what to do about it. For one reason, we don't know what it is. Send for my free reports to taraka53@hotmail.com. That's taraka53@hotmail.com. We'll send our articles to you. We'll also send one good solid video that should do it once and for all about exercising your freedom of right to travel. And our second video shows you exactly what to do with your writ of habeas corpus, how to deal with these people in the courtroom, and what to send these people and how to respond to them. Send that to taraka53@hotmail.com, or you can call me, area code 904-303-9061, before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Don't hesitate to visit our website, taraka53@hotmail.com. That's the email website, www.newdateelimination.com. When it comes to child support, many brothers and sisters just come to the conclusion that I'm just done. There is nothing I can do. They got me. Well, what we need to understand is this whole system is bogus, believe it or not. And for proof of that, why don't you send for my free articles? We'll also send one good audio clip and one good solid video clip to you. And by the time you listen to this and read this, you will clearly understand that there is a way out. You can send that to taraka53@hotmail.com. That's taraka53@hotmail.com, and I'll rush that right straight to you. Don't hesitate to visit my website, www.newdebtelimination.com. For information on us, go to www.newdebtelimination.net. Don't hesitate to call me, area code 904-303-9061, before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It's not over. It's just what you know. Peace.
Okay, Moses, we're back. Now, we do have one more segment to run, but at this juncture, if anybody have any questions in regard to anything that you've heard here, so far, the number to dial into the broadcast is 310-982-4184. That's 310-982-4184. I'll open up the line so you can get in. You can let us know what's on your mind. Brother Credo Mutawai has dropped a tremendous amount of information, and I've investigated this stuff and found some of the most extraordinary things based on what he said, and I've ran into a great deal of secret knowledge and stuff. Personally, I'm afraid to even mention it on the air. I really am. Most people probably wouldn't get it anyway, because this stuff here is this is totally off the grid, totally bizarre, but it is quite amazing. But nevertheless, I wanted to introduce you to this guy. Those of you who are unfamiliar with Credo Mutawai, I wanted to introduce him to you. You can go over to YouTube and type in his name, and he has a ton of videos over there. And you can hear the whole story from every conceivable angle. This guy carried an ancient necklace that had been passed down for hundreds of years from his ancestors, and he had had it bestowed upon him. But he was kidnapped, tortured, and the necklace was stolen from him. And the necklace itself was an extraordinary story, and he tells you about that. You'll be able to see
that information is rather on YouTube, CREDOMUTWA, Credo Mudawa. We put that in the chat room for those of you who can scroll back up the chat room and write that down. Go over to YouTube and check this guy out because he is quite extraordinary with the prophets and stuff and the things in his life that he has been through that he's willing to talk about. There have been several attempts on his life to keep him from exposing the information that you have heard here this evening in regards to the reptilians, what he's calling the Chitauri. This is the reptilian agenda, and these people who have been here on this planet, these creatures that have been here on this planet now have managed to infiltrate us. And in a lot of cases, we're thinking they're human beings, but they're not. And a lot, especially in the power circle among the elite people and the people that is living a long time on this planet. Now, for instance, how is it possible for Queen Elizabeth to still be alive today? Let's go all the way back and see how long she'd be living, and you discover something's going on there. With the lady. I've been looking, I've been like, wow, you know, what is this? I mean, you've been living, it appears, for hundreds and hundreds of years now. You was alive before the Civil War. You're still alive today. You come on now. Thank people. Thank. And read the stories and the information and check the videos out on YouTube in regard to the reptilians and their ties to the royal families of the earth and all this stuff, and it will all make sense to you, what you check out. Now, I'm going into the final episode, and I saved this one for last. In my opinion, this is very extraordinary information. So y'all sit back and check it out.
Prison, we don't even know who the jailers are. Indeed, when the jailers are exposed, people just laugh and ridicule and all that stuff. So we're in an unbelievable situation. And we're in a jail we deny we're in, and there are jailers we deny exist, and we call it freedom.
Yes, sir. Yes. You know, Mr. David, the reason, one of the reasons why I've joined forces with you is because I have serious reason to believe, and I will repeat these words until somebody shuts my mouth in death. I have serious reason to believe that on this planet, things are coming to a head, and our invisible jailers are going to fight tooth and nail to prevent this. Say, our people say that the blackest night often heralds the brightest dawn. The human being, captive as he is, slave as it is trying to fight back, sir. And this is where the crunch is going to come. I believe that we are not far away from the bloodiest crunch in the world. And I will tell you, my visions tell me that we are going to be struck with the most terrible sword of all, the sword of money, sir. Something is going to be done to money which will bring us all to the level of beggars. And do you know why, sir? Let me tell you. I used to work for big game hunters in Kenya. And one of them was an Italian gentleman. This Italian gentleman was such a powerful hunter, a white hunter. He used to shoot 2 bull elephants a day in Kenya, and he used to celebrate the shooting with a huge bottle. He called it a magnum of wine. I remember him pouring some of the wine onto the heads of the dead elephants. And then,
One day we went with this man to the land now called Rwanda, which used to be called Rwanda Urundi. We went up the mountain and there, accompanied by pygmies, he shot a gorilla, a huge ngangi with silver fur all along its back. And the great beast died so bravely that this Italian hunter started weeping like a woman. He fired us, told us that the job is finished, and he never hunted again. Sir, what I'm trying to tell you is this, that something inside us human beings is beginning to fight back against the Chitauri. Something inside us human beings is beginning to say no. And the Chitauri are going to drag us all right into hell itself in order to restore their power over us. Let me show you. Who would have thought in the 1950s, during the time of the Cold War, when everybody was expecting a bloody Third World War between Stalinist Russia and the Western nations, when British, American, and even Russian nuclear bombs were exploding all over the place, who would have thought that a few decades after that, there would come a time when a group of young men and women, the people of Greenpeace, would sail their ship, the Greenpeace warrior, into a nuclear zone to prevent the French from testing one more atomic bomb. This tells us that something inside the human soul is fighting back. 40 years ago, it was once a very glamorous thing to kill animals. Today, a big game hunter like my Italian friend would never dare show himself in some hotels. He would be spat at and he would be beaten up by people because the hero of yesterday, the Buana Banduki, the gun Buana of 40 years ago, is today a murderer. Now, things are coming to a crunch. 40 years ago, nobody cared a damn about the environment. People did not even know that there existed such a thing as an environment or a food chain. Today, there are people who would rather lose their lives than not save a buck which is drowning in a river. A god is being born inside us, all of us. But herein lies the danger. We must be aware of the Chitauri. They are real entities. They leave scars on human bodies. They kill people. They are murdering South Africa even as we are talking now. Every word you and I are speaking now is spoken too late, Mr. David. AIDS is rampaging through our communities, and I have found a new disease in Botswana, which nobody is talking about even. It is 20 times more vicious than AIDS. It is called Ebola. Oh my God. And we must please be aware. Let nobody laugh when we talk about conspiracy theories. But there is one thing, sir, that I beg that you and others like you should discard. Una momento, as they say in South America. Stop calling the conspiracy a theory, sir. Theories do not kill people, Mr. David. Theories do not murder innocent children. Theories do not put multiple murderers of Kabilan stripe into power in countries.
Absolutely.
Theories are just ideas floating in the air. The conspiracy is real. It is there, and it kills.
The staggeringly intelligent, the staggeringly wise, and the staggeringly knowledgeable Credo Mutwa. And his knowledge the world needs to know. Not only is Credo a man who has gathered this enormous knowledge together, he's a man with the courage and the foresight and the wisdom to know that the world needs to hear this, even though most of the world, particularly those who run the world, don't want anyone to hear this. But if we're going to be free, and we are, then we need to know all there is to know, and not just that which the few want us to think is the world, when a very different world is unfolding all around us every day. In the next video, we're going to be taking the story on with Credo and showing how these reptilian bloodlines and this Chitahuli, this reptilian group, expanded their power across the world, took over Africa and other great continents, and today are the ruling elite that controls planet Earth. And by knowing that, and by knowing how it's done and how it works, we can take control and power back into our lives from those who have controlled us and this planet for thousands of years. It's a great time to be alive from Africa for now. Thank you, and thanks for listening to A Remarkable Man.
Okay, there you have it. Credo Mutwa, driving a 411 dime on this thing, so you knew what's behind all the evil and wickedness and the wars and all this. The reptilians had to be fed. They feed on negative energy, so therefore there is a constant war chaos somewhere every day. And in order for these creatures to eat, and this is why we are experiencing what we're experiencing in the world today, it has been that way ever since they first introduced themselves to mankind. However, they have a time limit, and we're moving toward the end of that time limit. And But just like any other animal, got a hold to its prey, they want to put up a fight before they let it go. So we're going to have to experience a few things, and this is one of the reasons why we have these broadcasts here on Morris Talk Live 100, to make you aware and to prepare you for what's coming into the future. Okay. Now, we're going to take a little quick break, and I'm going to be closing out. And I would encourage you to listen to this broadcast over and over again, and to get this stuff and then go.
Removing the burdens of debt gives us a freedom unmatched. Peace of mind is something that's very vital to our health. Not only do we want to concentrate on growing our own food and contributing to nutrition, but we also want to free our mind from the burden of stress. Stress is a killer. Go to www.newdebtelimination.com. Look at the items we have there. Before making any selections, you can give me a call. If you have problems with your student loan, if you got a situation with the Internal Revenue Service, mortgage, or whatever it is, go to newdebtelimination.com. Contact me, Tahaka Amanio Bay, 904-303-9061, before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Remove the burden of debt.
Okay, Moors, I've been your host, Tahaka Amana El Bay, and until next time, you all have a good evening. We're going to close down this show tonight, and I hope you all got something out of this thing, okay? Y'all have a good day.
I work hard all day long, and I do it all for you.
just to prove, baby, that my love for you is true. Oh, you welcome me with such a tender kiss. And loving you right now, baby, is so hard to resist. Oh, but now the day is all through. It's so good to be home with you. Oh, baby, it's so good to be home with you, baby. You have such a lovely dinner waiting for me when I come home, ready to do anything at all for me, whether it's right or wrong. You look so good standing there in that pretty negligee. I would wait 7 days a week, 24 hours of the day, 'cause I know when the day is all through, it'll be so good to come home to you. Oh, amen. So good to come home to you.
So tired.
Yeah, it is rough. But like that old Sam said, when it's too rough for the average person, baby, it's just right for me when it comes to you. You see, baby, it hurt me so bad to get up every morning and go to work and leave you and the kids here in this two-room apartment. But I know the only way I'm going to be able to do anything about it is to keep working.
Makes being away from you for 1 minute, oh, seems so unfair. Well, but now the day is all through, it's so good to be home with you. Oh, baby, it's so good to be home with you, baby. So good, so good, so good, baby, you make me feel so good, oh baby, when I walk through the door, telling me how much you love me, baby. You say each day you love me more and more. Thank you. Oh, baby. You look so good to me standing there. And that pretty little Jane. I will wait 7 days a week, baby, 24 hours of a day. Cause I know when the day is all through, baby, so good to be home with you.
Baby, could I have another kiss?